Is he my prince? Is he the toad? Waiting, wondering, is getting too old. I'm gonna let down my hair, slide up my skirt. Get me up, be the biggest little flirt. Welcome to the Shame-Free Zone with Veronica Monet, your friendly former sex worker and certified sexologist. The Shame-Free Zone is a safe place for your questions and your secrets about all things sexual.
Hey, welcome to the Shame Free Zone. This is your host, Veronica Monet. It's Labor Day. And my guest, unfortunately, just pulled a disappearing act. Can't say I blame her. It was a gorgeous day. Summer was on its way out. And frankly, I wish I had spent the day swimming in the Yuba River. But I made it a work day. And then I had to take my dog to the vet. So that's the kind of day I've had. It was actually a very beautiful day, but not particularly about playing and goofing off. And I imagine everybody else, hopefully you were out there boating, fishing, water skiing, hiking, swimming, whatever, something out in the sun, something out in the heat. That would be my hope for you. But anywho, I actually have a topic tonight, and I hope that if you feel like calling in or just posting something on Facebook, too, you know, I've got a Facebook page. It's facebook.com/Veronica Monet, and I'd love to hear comments about tonight's topic because I'm going to be talking about Proposition 35. Now, if you don't know what Proposition 35 is, that's a California proposition. It's on the ballot this November. And it is anti-trafficking, or so it purports to be. It's actually being backed by one of the high-powered, wealthy people from Facebook. Right now, I got to say, his name escapes me. And I'm driving in my car, so I'm not going to be looking this up on the internet for you. But you can look it up, Proposition 35, California. And it's supposed to be protecting our children. Now, you know, I got to tell you, every time conservative people bring out their anti-sex legislation in the name of the children, you can bet that civil rights are getting ready to get trounced on. And that is very much the case with Proposition 35. One of the most egregious aspects of this bill is that it would make it mandatory for anybody who's ever convicted of what falls under the auspices of this proposition have to register all of their internet passwords, identity code, anything. Any way that they log onto the internet would become a matter of government record. And, you know, at first that might actually sound like a pretty good idea. We would be able to put pedophiles behind bars, and they'll never be able to look up child porn again. And I think so many people, and self-included, don't have a lot of nice things to say about people who prey on children. So it's really, really easy to get this kind of legislation passed. There is absolutely nobody opposing this measure. Nobody. Nobody, that is, except for my friend Maxine Dugan over at the Erotic Service Providers Union. And as a matter of fact, if you go to the voters' pamphlet, you will find for Proposition 35 that there is a statement of opposition, and it comes from the Erotic Service Providers Union, and that's it. And that's really sad to me because actually, to tell you the truth, the American Civil Liberties Union has actually spoken out against this measure as well because of the huge abridgment of civil rights that it poses. Now, but obviously they didn't want to actually step up to the plate and put their name on the ballot as being against the measure. And this is the difficulty that we are running into, is how to have a sane conversation about the trafficking issue and about prostitution. It's very, very difficult to get anybody to have a sane conversation about this because there's a lot of hysterics. Understandably, everybody wants to protect children. Understandably, nobody wants to see anybody working under slavery conditions, far less sexual services as a slave. I think that's just nightmare kind of material for people. It really creates a sense of despair and panic. And I can understand, I really do, but it just takes so much more education about the topic before you can really comprehend what's at play here. Let me see if I can give you a crash course in this, okay? Basically, what is happening is that some people who believe that all prostitution is a dark and evil thing that needs to be squashed are interested in flying that under the radar of anti-trafficking. Now, the way that's accomplished is that you write the proposition as vaguely as you possibly can. And this Proposition 35 is about as vague as they come. It seems that anybody could wind up being a sex offender under Proposition 35. Now, you know, the fact is, we'll never know unless it gets passed and it goes to the court. And that's a really frightening thing if you think about it. But we've got to wait until a test case. And who is the poor soul who's going to get convicted of this felony sex crime? Well, one of the things that I posited as I was reading Proposition 35, and I ended up blogging about it, and you can go check that out at wordpress.com/ Veronica Monet. Is the idea that what if this law got applied to anybody who had fallen into disfavor? Now, let's say it was a gay person or a person of color or a transgender person or just somebody who's being persecuted by the community. It's easy enough to take Proposition 35 and pretty well bend it in any direction you want it to go and have it mean anything you want it to say. So after I reviewed the wording, I could see where it would be pretty easy to make a case that a young man, let's say he's 18, and he takes his 17-year-old girlfriend to the movies, and he buys her a bucket of popcorn and a movie ticket. And let's say after the movie, this 18-year-old boy and 17-year-old girl have some type of sexual contact. And maybe they don't actually have sexual intercourse, but maybe it's oral sex. You know, you and I both know this is a very common scenario. It's not science fiction. We are not, you know, saying, what if, oh my God, you know, it'd be a rare occurrence. It's happening all the time. It's going to happen thousands of times this evening while you and I are musing on this particular topic. I guarantee you, there's lots of 18-year-olds and 17-year-olds that are getting together and having some kind of sexual contact with each other. And somebody probably pulled some money out of their wallet to pay for something. So the way Proposition 35 is written, it's a possibility. Now, granted, very unlikely that law enforcement would be going after a young man who is taking a young woman out to the movies, but it could happen. And really all that has to happen is to get on somebody's, shit list, excuse my French, but that's pretty much what that boils down to. If somebody's got it in for you and they decide to report you, they have to investigate. And ordinarily, this would be a statutory rape case. However, it usually falls under what are called the Romeo and Juliet laws, which says that if the age of these two people is that close and they happen to be young, we'd probably cut them some slack and nobody's going to go to jail. That only applies if there's not an angry parent in the mix somewhere. Now, if there is an angry parent somewhere, got a good chance of seeing somebody go to jail. In the past, really good chance the judge would have some discretion. He could take into consideration previous record of this particular young man and how well he knew the so-called victim. You know, personally, I think when you're talking about a 17 and an 18-year-old in the city, that there are any laws that could be applied to a situation like that. But nevertheless, we have these cutoff points, and this is where a lot of times otherwise innocent people get caught. So the way Proposition 35 is written is that we're going to take this particular infraction, and now we're going to make it a mandatory felony, and it will not be something that a judge or a jury would have any discretion around. It's mandatory. And furthermore, the victim cannot be questioned and cannot volunteer any kind of testimony that might go in the favor of the defendant. So this proposition is written so that we really are eliminating any loopholes. And, you know, if you're thinking about pedophiles and traffickers who are taking advantage of young children and slave labor, most of us are kind of like, who cares? But this is the what I'm trying to impress upon you is that Proposition 35 is a wide net. It's a huge net, and it's going to pull a lot of innocent people into it. So let's take another scenario. One of the other things about this, the way the Proposition 35 is written, is that the family of sex workers can wind up being prosecuted for felonies. And there is some possibility of that, even today, the way the prostitution and pimping and pandering laws are written. It's certainly something that I worry about when I was working as an escort for almost 15 years. I was married, I had children, and I owned my home. But before that, I actually rented an apartment. I didn't live out of it, I just worked out of it. But that actually put my landlord in a pretty precarious position. And the way the state of California laws are written today, before Proposition 35, is pretty obtuse. This is how it shakes out. If you were in Texas, let's say, and somebody, like your neighbor, accused you of being a prostitute, you would have your day in court, because that's the way Texas law is written. So there'd have to be a trial. Somebody'd have to be able to prove that you were a known prostitute before your landlord could evict you. In the state of California, the laws are written such that if anyone accuses you of being a prostitute, if it's just a rumor, if it's just gossip, if it's common knowledge in the neighborhood, you don't have to be arrested. You certainly are not going to get your day in court. This is one of those cases where you are guilty, and you're never going to get proven innocent. And basically, your landlord must evict you if he's heard a rumor that you're a prostitute. Because if he keeps the lease going with you, then he will get an automatic pimping and pandering felony charge. And I want to tell you something. Pimping and pandering felony charges are an automatic 2 years in prison. just as Proposition 35 is searching for. I think Proposition 35 might be 21 months. But anyway, this mandatory felony for just knowing somebody and doing business with somebody who might be a sex worker is incredibly disturbing. And now with Proposition 35, we've been moving in the direction of solidifying what are already very, very bad laws and badly written laws. So the opportunity and the chances that people would be sent to prison for at least 2 years for a felony charge that's on their record forever and have to report all of their internet passwords and access codes to the government for life, not for the amount of time that they're on probation or parole, but for life. Because here's the kicker about Proposition 35. It's going to force anybody who falls under its purview to register as a sex offender for the rest of their lives. So now we're back to that 18-year-old boy who takes his girlfriend out for a movie and a bowl of popcorn. He'll be registering as a sex offender for the rest of his life. Yeah, and I can hear you probably thinking, oh, surely that's not going to happen. I hope you're right. And certainly, you know, those of us who are trying to work against this measure are hoping that even if California voters unfortunately pass the law and do so with the best of intentions, the intentions of protecting children, of stopping slavery, that it will be contested in court. And if at the very least, hopefully, and I think that Tom Amiano from San Francisco is certainly willing to help rewrite the law so that it isn't so overbroad and going to put a lot of innocent people behind bars and cost you and I tax dollars in the process, of course. But ideally, we don't even want to get to that point. Once laws are on the books, we can only hope that they will somehow or another get modified so that they are not so poorly written and so damaging to the people that they are supposed to be protecting, which is you and I and our families. If you talk about another aspect of this, which is really about associating with a prostitute, and the way Proposition 35 is written, the intention, I hope, I can only hope the intention was that it was going to be making sure that potential pimps were not given any loophole under the law, that they would absolutely go to prison, absolutely be prosecuted, and in particular, if they were pimping and pandering anybody under the age of 18. Unfortunately, that's not how the law is written. The way it's written, it suggests that anybody who is living with or receiving monies from a prostitute could be cast in that role as trafficker and pimp. Now, what are we talking about here? We're talking about the family of sex workers. So that could be a husband, a wife, a domestic partner. It could be children, grandparents, parents, aunts, uncles, anybody who might be getting, let's say, a check. Now, what form might that take? Well, certainly some sex workers have family, like a parent who's maybe in, a care center, a place where, retirement care center, if you will, special needs care centers. Some place where they would actually be sending a check. It could also apply to somebody who is living in the same house with a sex worker. That's really reaching into the lives of a lot of people that are not really the intended targets of Proposition 35. But that's the way it's written. And it's written to really create a question mark. So I can't guarantee you that this is how it would be applied. But here's the problem. If laws are written in a sloppy fashion, nobody can guarantee you how they're going to be applied. It really depends on the prosecutor and it depends on the judge. And that varies by county, city. There's no way of knowing unless you just happen to be the person who is the test case, right? So I don't know if any of you who are actually listening to this program tonight might have sex workers who are friends, but it's something to think about. So entertain this thought for a minute. Maybe you think, well, I don't know any prostitutes, but I have friends who are strippers. Well, if they work in any of the major clubs in San Francisco, there's a lot of prostitution taking place in those clubs. A lot. And I'm not going to mention the names of the clubs because I don't want to get sued here, but the fact is that most of the major strip clubs offer prostitution as a side, a side benefit, if you will. And usually the local government kind of turns a blind eye. Now, I don't know what would happen after Proposition 35. People be prosecuted to the full extent of the law, or would they continue to be kind of immune to the laws as they currently read even, are not usually applied to them? It's hard to say. It really depends, I suppose, on who's paying off whom. But it's something to think about if you know somebody who's an erotic dancer or works in a club. There's a chance, I'm not saying that they are, but there's a chance they might actually be committing acts of prostitution, which, as you know, I've got nothing morally against. I've worked as a prostitute for 15 years. I'm just saying, it all depends on who gets arrested and how this gets prosecuted. And if they happen to be, what if they're living with you? What if it's your roommate? I mean, every time I go to speak at colleges and universities, sex workers come up out of the woodwork. They're in college, trust me. They are. And I certainly hear about it. I know prostitutes who are therapists, nurses, school teachers. I mean, you know, but they are not of a certain age. So hopefully they wouldn't even fall under 35. But this is another gray area about 35. And here's the gray part. Because of the way it's written, sting operations that are conducted by the police wouldn't necessarily be targeted to somebody that was younger. It could be targeted to sex workers who appear young. And in fact, that has happened to sex workers here in Northern California. They've been arrested because they looked young. And the police officers thought they were going to get themselves a trafficking bust. And instead, they were just harassing some sex worker in her late 20s, early 30s. I have to say, when it comes to busting prostitutes, it's pretty easy gig if you can get it. They're not usually dangerous people. They don't usually carry weapons. And it's kind of fun, titillating work if you have a kink in that direction. There are a lot of abuses that go on with vice towards prostitutes. Proposition 35 is hoping to rectify that. I wish that were the case, but they do. But the way it's written, I don't think it's going to create any help whatsoever for sex workers. I don't think they're going to find any corner there with Proposition 35. The intention was hopefully that prostitutes wouldn't be convicted, just those people around them. So I think, okay, well, what people around them? You know, you may think this is a really easy matter of who's the pimp and who's the prostitute. But even that can be very confusing. Let me give you an example. When I was working as an escort, I would sometimes invite a girlfriend to join me with a client. Now, we called these doubles. And she wasn't working for me. I wasn't working for her. But because it was my client, he was more likely to hand that money to me, and then I would hand her her portion. In the act of receiving the funds from the client, I become the person who's the employer by legal standards. I could get prosecuted for a felony. I could go to jail for pimping and pandering if I were still doing that, if I was taking that money. I was always very, very careful when I was working in escorting. If I invited one of my girlfriends to see a client with me, I never handled the money. I always instructed the client to put her money in one envelope, put mine in another, and pay us individually. And, you know, that was playing it safe. There's a lot of people who have no idea that that's the law and how it reads. I mean, there's just a lot of people in California, frankly, who don't even know prostitution is illegal. And why would they? Right next door in the state of Nevada, they have legal prostitution. And mind you, the prostitution is not legal unless you are working in a licensed brothel. But we've got reality TV shows now, like Dennis Hoff's Bunny Ranch, got a reality TV show. And I just got a message on Facebook from Sonia, my friend Sonia, who's at a brothel in Nevada. She's possibly going to be heading up a brothel. I think it's like the Alien Bunny Ranch, something like that. I don't know. I'm interested to find out what that's going to be like. But, you know, when it's legal right next door, it's hard sometimes for people to wrap their mind around the fact that it's illegal over here. And just think, if Proposition 35 passed here in California, we're going to be next to a state that has legal prostitution in some sectors. And in our state, it will be basically a felony. So that's a very scary, scary thing to me, because I got to go, there's going to be a lot of people who are just going to get caught unawares, and they're not going to have any idea. So what about trafficking? I know you all are hearing so much about that. And I'd like to suggest that you check out a book written by Laura Augustin, if you get a chance. Augustin, A-U-G-U-S-T-I-N, Laura Augustin. Get a chance to check out her books, her blog, anything. Just Google her name and trafficking, and things will come up. You know, she's done a tremendous amount of research. She's been all over the world, actually, and studied trafficking in other countries. So I consider her the go-to person for this particular topic. Check her out. But I will give you what I understand about the trafficking issue. First of all, the thing to know about trafficking is it's not just about sex. Trafficking applies to all kinds of things. Lawn mowing, you know, working in the garment industry, food preparation. Lots of people are trafficked to a lot of different types of jobs around the world. It's a big problem, and it's really one which is born from poverty. People coming from so-called countries who do not have resources and are willing to take desperate measures to try to improve their lives. Look at the United States as a land of opportunity, and somebody says, help them come here and find a lucrative job, and then they find themselves in a situation where they're in more of a slave relationship or an indentured relationship with the person who said they were going to employ them, change their life for better. Now, for some people who are trafficked, they may actually choose to stay with it, hoping that they could pay off their debts and then buy their freedom, basically. For others, the conditions that they're working under are absolutely despicable. They would love to get home, but cannot get away from the trafficker, who oftentimes is using brutal measures to keep them imprisoned and enslaved. So if we were really interested in the trafficking issue, we'd want to be looking at economic issues as well, and about the disparity between different countries. Obviously, those issues are broad, so if we're trying to fine-tune that and just deal with traffickers, it makes me very angry when it all comes down to the sex trafficker. Because people get so hysterical about sex work as if there is no worse job on the planet. And frankly, I had a college education and 7 years in corporate America when I chose to go into the sex industry. And there's a lot of jobs that I've actually worked that are way worse than escorting. I worked in a cannery when I was in college. Come home covered in corn, had to wear a hairnet. Let me tell you, I was a lot worse than my worst day escorting. My best day in the cannery was worse than my worst day as an escort. Absolutely, hands down, no contest. I've talked to women who have worked as nurses and had to change bedpans and went into escorting because they saw the job as being preferable, better than being a nurse. I'm not saying that escorting is better than nursing. I'm just saying that some people have had that experience of finding it to be more attractive as far as its working conditions. So, you know, we're all different, and this is one of the things the trafficking hysteria doesn't seem to take into consideration, is that adult people should be allowed to choose what works for them and what doesn't work for them. And unfortunately, when it comes to the morals police, choice is not on the radar. And this is the other thing that's really disturbing about Proposition 35. It really is starting to erode at our choice. And it looks like a very, very slippery slope to me, where we can start making inroads on censoring people's access. Hey, I'm back. Hey, sorry about that. What can I say? These darn phones. this is Veronica Monet in the Shame-Free Zone, for those of you who are just tuning in. And we are discussing Proposition 35 on the California ballot this fall. November 2nd, you will be asked to vote about, or is it November 6th? I forget. Well, anyway, first week in November, you're going to be asked to vote on Proposition 35. Yes or no is the question here. And I'm asking you to seriously consider a no vote. The reason being that Proposition 35 is a wolf in sheep's clothing. It is very, very much geared to erode your civil rights and your sexual bill of rights, for that matter. But even if we're not talking about sex for just a moment here, I'm really concerned about the corrosive effect on civil rights that Proposition 35 is going to have. Because here's the question. If we are able to take your internet access, your passport, your login, and give that information to the government because you have committed a crime, how long before we can apply it to other crimes? So, I mean, this really does set a precedent which says to the government, yes, you can censor my access to the internet if I break a law. Right now, most people are really on board for this. And I want to tell you, the guy from Facebook who's funding this to the tune of about, well, in excess of $1 million, he's bucking to run for office. That's what he wants to do. He wants to run for political office. He thinks that this is going to get him in good with California voters, because he will have been the guy who stamped out human trafficking and eliminated sexual slavery. We got to admit, it's not a bad approach. And unfortunately, a lot of people are not going to research this proposition. They are just going to hear that it's here to protect children and prosecute pimps and human traffickers, and they're going to say, put them in jail, take away their access to the internet, throw them away, and, you know, throw the key away. I get it. I really do. I understand the anger, and I understand the fear that drives this. But I don't think it's in anyone's best interest. I really don't. And I think it takes us in a direction where we are really starting to give away even more of our civil liberties than we already have. Which, frankly, I think is a frightening proposition because we've given away a lot of our civil rights so far. So I wanted to get a little bit into the topic of trafficking and the time that we've got left, just to try to sort this topic out for you. And I did mention Laura Augustine, who has written extensively on the topic, and I consider her the go-to person on this topic. Please look her name up on the internet, Laura Augustine, and see if you agree. Check out some of her blogs and get one of her books. Research the topic if you're really interested. But here it is in a nutshell. Trafficking affects all lines of work, especially low-income types of work that don't require much documentation. So kind of entry-level jobs tend to be the ones that the traffickers supply slaves to. And yes, it is a modern-day form of slavery, or indentured servants, if you will. Some of those people are working in the sex industry. And oftentimes people who are working in the sex industry are having physical violence imposed upon them. So it is absolutely just grotesque and horrible and tragic, and it's an abomination. And I absolutely think that we need to find ways to combat trafficking of all sorts, and sexual trafficking in particular. But here's the thing. Your best resource in finding the traffickers is prostitutes. And when you make it illegal to be a prostitute, you just silenced your best source of information. So the adult prostitutes who would report underage prostitution, who would report pimps, who would report traffickers, have their hands tied, and they're not able to go to law enforcement and tell them what they know because they're afraid of going to jail. You think this is science fiction, perhaps. I've lived it. I didn't know any traffickers, but I knew a serial rapist that needed to be arrested. I knew where he lived. I knew his name. I knew his bank account. I had the goods on this guy for 3 years. I wasn't able to take this information to Oakland PD. And I was working through all kinds of women's organizations, trying to get support. I was getting tons of support from many different women's organizations, including Women Against Rape out of Oakland, trying to get the Oakland Police Department to take my deposition about this serial rapist. And they were only interested in putting me in jail. They made that abundantly clear, that I would be arrested if I reported this rape. That's criminal. That is criminal. Eventually, because I've got a high profile, and I had the entire time I was working at Escort for 20 years, I was on television, and I was working with Robin Few over Sex Worker Outreach Project, and bless her, she knew how to pull strings through the government. She got us an audience in the mayor's office. At the time, it was Mayor Jerry Brown. Jerry Brown was the mayor of Oakland at the time. So I got to do a deposition in his office, and there were two plainclothes police officers there to take the statement. And, of course, you do know how the story ends, right? Serial rapist never got arrested. Yeah. But we did put political pressure on the city to take the report, at least, after 3 years. This is the kind of thing I'm talking about. You've got laws against prostitution. You make it illegal for prostitutes to report rapes, robberies, assaults, traffickers, underage prostitution. You just make it impossible for them to cooperate with law enforcement. So where are you going to get that information? Well, the cops are just going to have to cruise the internet and take their best guess at it, and usually they're wrong. Usually they seem to make some really ridiculous stabs at trying to find the bad guys, and they wind up pulling in a lot of innocent people. When I say innocent, yes, they may be guilty of providing somebody with an orgasm for cash, but they're not doing it as an underage person, and they're not forcing anybody else to do it against their will. So, most of us who care about civil rights feel that the best way to combat trafficking is to elicit the help and the assistance of sex workers in the trade. There's not really any sex workers who want to be underage prostitution. And certainly they don't want to see, you know, children 11, 12 years old working in prostitution. When you start talking about runaways and their teens, this actually becomes a little bit of a difficult topic. I know some sex workers who ran away when they were 15, 16, 17 years of age. And they can feel pretty strong about the idea of making it a crime for somebody in their teens to work as a prostitute. I think that this is an issue that needs a lot of consideration as well, because you're talking about what do we do with runaways who are often running away from sexual abuse. No, we don't want them to run into even more sexual abuse at the hands of a trafficker or a violent pimp. But oftentimes what will happen is they get sent back to an abusive home, and then they run away again. And so, you know, a lot of prostitutes find themselves in and out of the system, just paying off those fines and going right back to the work that they're supposedly being rescued from. So I think something that makes a lot more sense is to decriminalize prostitution and take the money. I don't know if you know this, but a city like the size of San Francisco probably spends, at this point, I know it was about $11 million about 8 years ago. So at this point, who knows? Maybe they're spending $15 million. At least $10 million, $11 million a year. Arresting prostitutes, putting them through the system, and then putting them back out there on the street. It's a huge waste of your tax dollars. They usually enforce the laws on street prostitutes. So street prostitutes get put through the system over and over and over again. They get multiple arrests. They start knowing the vice cops by name. They flirt with them. They make deals with them. There's a lot of opportunity for corruption and blackmail. It's really nasty in a lot of ways. And what we could do is take those millions and redirect the fund for domestic violence shelters that would actually accept working prostitutes and their children. You know, most of the street prostitutes that I'm aware of actually have kids. They're young women, oftentimes in their early 20s, who have children that they're trying to support. They're not able to go to a domestic violence shelter and get the kind of help they need from an abusive partner, i.e. him, because if they're still working as a prostitute, the domestic violence shelters cannot accept them. Am I bringing this full circle for you? The reason the domestic violence shelter cannot accept a working prostitute is because they fall under the California pimping and pandering laws, which say that if you are a landlord and a prostitute is living in your building. You're a pimp. So this is this vicious cycle. And until we can remove the laws that make it illegal to give somebody an orgasm in exchange for money, we're going to continue to see a lot of innocent people suffer. Yes, I absolutely think that we need to protect children from trafficking. Any kind of trafficking, whether it's sex trafficking or working in a garment industry or food service, underage children who are being forced to work need to be protected. And the people who are abusing them need to be prosecuted. But Proposition 35 is really just trying to take away two civil rights, your right to have sex as you choose as a consenting adult. No, the law doesn't come right out and say it's going to do that, but it is written so poorly and so vaguely that it has every opportunity to do that. And secondly, to set a precedent for using people's access to internet as a way to censor them and control them if they run afoul of the law. Now, obviously, you and I are not going to go out and traffic any minors, so we may feel like we're immune to this law. I mean, it's, so what? These people don't deserve rights. They're pigs. Okay, granted, I'll give you that. But if we start giving up their rights to the internet, it's not long before that starts becoming a penalty that's going to get written into other infractions. And, you know, it's not inconceivable that it could even be applied to drunk driving at some point. Think of it. If you don't know somebody who's working in the sex industry and could somehow or another get pulled in to Proposition 35 as because it is written so vaguely that we don't actually know what constitutes an act of prostitution. We don't actually know what constitutes a pimp or a trafficker. It's written so vaguely that almost anybody can end up being pulled in under this law. Even if you don't know anybody who's even skirting the edges of that, I think the idea that eventually the government would start using your internet access if you broke any laws. That makes my blood run cold. It's a very, very frightening thing to consider. So I am, in fact, asking you, please vote no on Proposition 35. And if you really care about trafficking, if you care about sex trafficking in particular, please read Laura Augustine's blogs and her books. This woman, unlike so many of the people who have jumped on the human trafficking bandwagon, she's actually been to the countries where the trafficking is taking place. She's met the people who have been trafficked. And she's got a much deeper understanding of the socioeconomic factors which come into play on this particular topic. So, yeah, please, let's not get hysterical about sex and minors to such a point that we write a law which is so poorly drafted that just about anybody can wind up serving several years in prison for a mandatory felony that the judge does not have any discretion in the sentencing process. Frightening, frightening thought, I think. So, anyway, thanks for bearing with the change in schedule and also for bearing with the interruption when I lost my reception. I will be back again next Monday, and I have a guest I know is going to show up. His name is Howard Bloom. Howard Bloom has a brand new book, and it's called The God Problem. Now, I don't know if you know Howard Bloom. He's promoted a lot of big names in the music industry, including Michael Jackson. And he wrote a book that I'm a huge fan of called The Lucifer Effect several years ago. Lucifer Principle. Lucifer Principle. And the new book now is The God Problem. So tune in next Monday, and we will pick Howard Bloom's huge brain and see what he can serve up in the way of, well, I'm sure he's going to take us on quite a ride. So it will be fun. Thanks so much, and I'll see you.
Thank you for tuning in tonight. If you liked what you heard and you want more solutions for your love life, please call me toll-free at 888-903-0050. Once again, that number is 888-903-0050. I am the only person who answers that line, and I am usually available Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Pacific time. You can also visit sexwithoutshame.com to discover more of what I can do for you. And remember, your secret is safe with me. Sering kesepian, kenapa tak mutus kabar berita?